Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the War Room of the O'Keefe Think Tank, this is Real Spoilers, episode 132, our special, ever-so-timely Halloween episode that we finally got around to doing. It is a Real Spoilers rewind. We were having a conversation online, and Joe was like, we should do a rewind, and Kevin was like, no, we need to do a Halloween episode, and I'm like, why don't we just do both, and you can shut the hell up.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn this podcast around right now.
And we said, fine, and we slammed our doors.
Yes. I'm the peacekeeper.
Yeah, right.
But I still do it in kind of a crappy way.
It worked.
It's what I do.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just ask my kids. So our movie du jour, if you really want to say it properly.
Oh, I don't.
No, I know you don't. It will be Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
The original.
The 1993 version.
Oh, did I see the wrong one? Wait, there was another one?
Yeah, Tom Savini did a remake.
Yeah. I was kidding.
Oh, there's like a lot of other ones.
Oh,
it's awful.
Yeah.
There's one with Sid Haig.
There's one with what?
Yeah, Sid Haig, who was in like House of a Thousand Corpses, mm-hmm. and
Spider
the Devil's
Baby.
Rejects and all the Rob Zombie stuff. There's another one that's out there that he is in
3D.
As well. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yikes.
Well, first,
public domain.
Before we get too much, that's what happens when you forget to put a copyright emblem on your movie.
Yeah.
We'll go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
I'm Dan Graney.
I'm Tim O'Sabin.
I'm Joe Battisi.
I'm Kevin Brackett.
And I am Tom O'Keefe. Tim hosts a horror podcast.
The Tim O. and Harley Show.
The Tim O. and Harley Show. And they deal with horror virtually exclusively. So we invited them onto the show because Joe's our resident horror expert. And we've come to find out that we probably shouldn't trust a damn word he has to say.
Safe bet.
So
I can only be an expert in so many fields, Tom. Like comic books.
Could you pick one?
Nope.
Would that be possible?
I could do that. What's the point?
Yeah.
If there was a wrestling horror comic book,
dude,
he would be the guy.
There is a wrestling comic book coming out like next month called Ringside from Image Comics. It looks awesome.
There you go.
People thought that when Mr. T was going to have a comic book too.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
That was not.
Hulk Hogan's comic book.
No. So I guess we should start with my confession, which is because I'm not a horror guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I've seen horror movies. It's not like I avoid them. They just don't do a whole lot for me typically. I had never seen this movie.
Have you seen this?
Really?
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did.
Okay.
I always have seen the movie.
But I was like, of all the weeks for the one that Tom's going to skip, he's like, I'm just going to skip this one.
Yeah. Nope.
Well done.
I watched it.
Like, so
how did you
watch one that they would show like in film, like in film classes to be kind of the cool teacher around Halloween?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
no, I never.
How did you watch it? Like, did you rent it?
I watched it in two different mediums. I had actually banked it off of Turner Classic Movies. It was sitting on the DVR in my bedroom.
Okay.
And we watched the first half in there. And then in case you couldn't tell by all the coughing I've been doing, I was not feeling well. So I didn't finish watching it. I went to bed. And then we were out in the living room watching it the next night. And oddly, there's nowhere that it streams legally,
mm-hmm.
which is really weird because it's in the public domain.
It is on Amazon
Prime.
Yeah,
you can buy it. It's just not free.
No, it's free if you have Amazon Prime.
Is it okay? Because
I watched it last night when I went to
Can I Stream It?
It's not on there.
It was not a show, but it was
okay.
So what I ended up doing was I had found someone who had uploaded it to YouTube, and they can't take it down, I guess, because it's public domain. And so,
how was it? How'd it look?
It looked great.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I threw it in my watch it later, and then went and watched it through the YouTube app on my Roku.
Nice.
And so I watched it on my big screen, and it claimed to be an HD version. Man. And I don't know.
It's probably about as HD as you're going to get on YouTube.
Totally. But but no, it looked great. It was a great looking
excellent
copy. And then I saw someone else had uploaded a non-HD version. And I kind of, like a non-remastered version.
It looks like watching it on VHS.
Like, I kind of wish I watched that one.
Yeah.
Like, there was just something creepier about, like, the little pops and scratches.
Yeah, there's a lot of halos around the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has more of a documentary feel.
Yeah.
The lower the quality.
So I have now seen A Night of the Living Dead movie.
Very good.
How about that? I don't think I've ever seen any of them.
You've never seen Day or Dawn either?
Nope.
Interesting. The old Dawn of the
Tim's
Dead.
Tim's getting ready to leave right at the
Dawn of the Dead at the mall. You've never seen either of those?
Nope.
Really? Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Right. I had the DVD. I picked up the DVD of Dawn of the Dead at a record store. We used to go around, and I worked at the rock club, and I would deliver posters to record stores, and I would go through the DVD bins and snag stuff, and then I bought it for like $8, and then at the time it was going for like $200.
It was out of print
on eBay. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, goodbye, Dawn of the Dead DVD. I made like $150 on that deal.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like the DVD version, the original DVD version of Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had the Adrian Barbeau's boobies.
Got that.
And there's the original DVD of Spinal Tap. The direct
the one with the commentary in character.
Well, I think what they have now is commentary in character. On the original one, it was the commentary out of character, and so they're actually legitimately discussing the film.
That's funny.
And so
that's so weird that they would not release that, especially now with like Criterion and all that stuff where they release 900. Like I just bought the Halloween box set, and each the Halloween Blue the Scream Factory put out like a 30 disc set or something. Yeah. And each disc has like 3 or 4 commentaries on them of like old ones, new ones, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I find it weird they would never release that with.
Yeah. As far as I know, because I have it on Blu-ray now, and the commentary is them in character.
Huh.
And there's a ton of deleted scenes.
The next Blu-ray that comes out will have both.
Right.
That's how they get you to.
That's how they get you.
Yep.
Yeah. But I've bought that for like $6 and sold it for like $100.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was a little cottage industry of mine for a while. But back to Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
I guess we should start our synopsis-izing. And I guess since we will let you do that, Joe.
Oh, very good.
Since you seem to be our resident synopsis-er.
Yeah. So this movie from 1968, black and white, it really, like, it came out at a time where I think the country was in a moment of strife. There was a lot of political stuff going on. I think, had Kent State happened yet? What year was that?
Yeah, there was.
You had Kent State, you had Kennedy.
Yeah, you had Vietnam.
Vietnam,
and
we
had things in within the country and outside
of
the country.
And then I think Romero actually tells a story. They finish filming. They throw the film in the back of their car. They're in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah. And as they're driving to take it to theaters, it comes over the radio that Martin Luther King had been shot.
Yeah.
So, like, Romero's like, holy, you know, the film that we have made maybe may not have started out to be a political film, but it absolutely turns into one given where we were in the country. So the film opens on
real quick. Kent State was 1970.
Okay. So, all right. So it's coming up. It hasn't happened yet, but
things were bubbling.
Correct. So the film opens, if you haven't seen it, it opens on a cemetery and you're introduced to two characters, a brother and sister. They're there to put some flowers on their mother's tombstone.
Johnny and Barbara.
And just the way the film opens, it's very normal. Like it feels like you're watching somebody's home movies where it's like Johnny doesn't want to go. He's like, this is stupid. We're wasting our time. Barbara is obviously the daughter who still cares. So she's like, you know, we have to go. It's what we do. So they're there and everything that you really see in the beginning, it's so far away that it seems innocent. Like the first time you see a zombie, he's so far in the distance that it just looks like a normal guy. Just, you know, kind of walking through and
shuffling around.
Right. Johnny starts giving Barbara a bunch of crap, you know, cause she's kind of freaked out. And then you stay focused on those two characters and you don't see anything else that's happening. And then out of nowhere, the guy who is shambling attacks and there's a fight with Johnny and Johnny ends up
dead,
biting it, no pun intended. And then, you know, Barbara takes off in the car, and then she ends up running through the woods, and she stumbles onto this house. The it's just like, so the traditional zombie that we know now didn't exist until 1968.
Yeah,
the zombies that we knew were like in Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
Exactly.
Where it's just like mindless drones, I guess.
Would white be the zombie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
voodoo.
Yeah. Right.
It's voodoo.
Right.
Yeah. They did not move quickly.
They don't move. They didn't move quickly until 2004.
But I have to say that I the one thing I was surprised, because I hadn't watched this in a long time, is that the first guy is pretty spry.
They moved more quickly than I would have anticipated. Yes. And the other thing I noticed about them that I don't really feel like, and I could be wrong, but from the zombie stuff I have watched, they used tools.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. He does use a rock to break through that
they
window.
They used a rock. They used. There was a couple different times when they would pick things up.
They
and
weren't as
use
mindless or slow
and,
as,
yeah.
as
and they
people
were,
remember.
They were pretty good at problem solving, at least in a rudimentary.
Right,
way.
Right.
In a way that I've not seen in other zombie movies.
So Romero, like, if you watch those, the ones that come after Day of the Dead, so there's like three more that are kind of in that world. Yeah. They start to develop. So like it starts in Day of the Dead, where there's a zombie called Bub, where he starts, like, they give him a phone and he picks it up and you know, his brain sort of is like, oh, I kind of remember what I'm doing, or a book or a razor blade.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get to the last one,
for the love
one,
of God, who hands a zombie a razor blade?
Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, right, right. So by the time you get to the last one, like, there's a character who's who knows how to fire.
They're developing a Republican democracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Riding a horse.
Yeah, riding. Yeah, there's zombies riding horses. There's,
are they zombie horses?
No.
Well, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's really a missed opportunity on their part.
Yeah.
To have a zombie riding a zombie horse.
Right, right. That would have been pretty cool.
You don't run with that?
No. Yeah. No,
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed.
You should be, because those movies are awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, his movies kind of had a progression of like what his zombies were becoming. Mm-hmm. And then they stopped, luckily. So we get to the house. And it, again, like, you could do this. We've talked about it before with Jobs.
Where this could have almost been a stage play.
Absolutely been a stage play. Because it takes
and
place.
And it is now.
Is it?
I saw last October, there's a theater company called New Line Theater in St. Louis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've been around for 25 years, and they put on amazing shows. I mean, everything they do is just wonderful. And they did Night of the Living Dead, the musical, last October. I saw it.
Is it tongue-in-cheek? Or
it is very serious with really good songs. I mean, everything they do is good. It's not like, oh, this is funny because it's so bad or jokey or anything.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was deliberately campy, because when you're musical.
Yeah, it is a horror musical.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is great.
Huh.
It was fantastic.
Evil Dead one, too. Evil Dead, the musical. Yeah.
And again, it's not campy. It's not trying to be funny.
I think that one's pretty
that
campy.
That one, I guess, yeah.
But the movies are campy.
But its source material is a lot campy.
But this is great. I mean, the characters are all there. It's based on this movie, but like this, again, the songs are good. It is scary. It's a great show. If anyone puts it on again, I mean, you should try to see it, because at first glance, you're just like, Night of the Living Dead, the musical, because you do think it's going
right.
to be goofy or whatever, but no, it's serious.
They stay true to the source material.
Yeah, and so it is, it could be a stage play, because it worked perfectly.
The rest of your movie, it takes place in this farmhouse. So Barbara gets to the farmhouse, and when she's inside, she realizes there was a family there at one point. The scene that we're coming up on is she's running through the house, and she's standing at the bottom of the steps. And I think she looks up and she sees like an eaten face. And it's the first time that I remember it was like, oh, geez. Like, cause I saw this Channel 11 here in town, which was like not public, but pretty close.
Independent station.
Yeah.
They didn't edit their films, but until mid-80s, I don't think.
Correct.
Oh, really?
So they would show unedited films?
I saw Repo Man unedited on there.
I remember I saw
Poltergeist.
I remember they went through a period in the early to mid-80s, Channel 11 did, where they decided to compete with cable. Yeah. They were going to show unedited films and just own it, but just like warn the hell out of you.
Yes.
And that's how I saw Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Mm-hmm.
You want to warp a kid, show him. You want to know what's wrong with me? I saw Looking for Mr. Goodbar unedited when I was 12.
Mm-hmm. So,
and you thought it was about candy.
What's that?
That explains a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
So right around Halloween, is they would show this movie every year, like three times a day.
Well, was it free at that time?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always been free.
It's in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it was the movie.
They could show it, and
it cost them $0
to
show.
Pretty much instantly went into the public domain, because back then, if you didn't attach a copyright notice to your film, it was automatically in the public domain. Yeah. And so this movie, like, was in the public domain almost instantly, right? Yep. So you would know better than me, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
The same thing happened to the movie Charade.
Really?
Which is a really good movie.
It's Cary Grant.
Yeah,
right?
It's Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn. Is it Audrey Hepburn? Yeah. And that movie's a lot of fun. But they forgot to attach a copyright notice to the film. And it's put out by a major studio.
Yeah.
They just forgot, and because of that, it was instantly in the public domain.
They remade that, didn't they? With Mark Wahlberg?
Did.
Yes. Oh, they did try to do an update of that. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Yikes.
You know, it kind of sucks for George Romero. I mean, obviously, with a lot of people's early movies, it's the same story over and over again. But this is one of the most successful independent movies of all time.
It's also, I think when you look at horror films, like, it is probably one of the most influential of all time,
right? Yeah. And so he made this movie on like something like $15,000 or
I think 100.
Oh, I'm sorry, $115,000, and it made $30 million worldwide.
When they started the National Film Registry, it was in the first crop of movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
To the list. In 1968, dollars.
Another piece of weird trivia: it's the first movie filmed in Pittsburgh.
Is that right?
It
is.
Which is like, that's odd.
I didn't know it was the first one, but I knew it was filmed outside Pittsburgh. Yeah. He was a commercial maker.
Yeah.
Actually, so the scariest thing he ever filmed. Did you ever hear the story?
No.
The scariest thing he ever filmed is he actually worked on the Mr. Rogers Show.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where he began.
And the scariest thing he said he ever filmed was Mr. Rogers Goes to the Dentist.
Yes.
And if you look at it, it's kind of creepy.
Is it
creepy?
Really?
Yeah. It's
just because the angles of trying to get that old equipment in those
film
shots.
Stock from the time and everything. It's just real.
It is horrifying.
Yeah.
Yikes. Because there's no, I mean, it's not like where we have GoPros and stuff like that.
Right.
They're trying to get film crews in a dentist's office around a
with
chair.
Big old camera.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers and Romero direct.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
But everybody, basically anybody who worked in the film industry around this time, like everybody worked on Mr. Rogers because it was, you know, it was one of the...
It was a paying gig.
Yeah. And it was one of the ones in town.
Yeah.
But this movie was truly indie. Most of the zombies in it are clients from their commercials.
Yeah.
And Johnny is the producer of the movie. Mm-hmm. They cast the producers, cast themselves in roles to save money. I mean, this was an indie movie. Talk about people like Kevin Smith becoming famous. I mean, this is
Kevin Smith to a point where he references this movie.
Yeah.
Like in Zach and Miri, they're in Monroeville.
Yeah.
Which is where Dawn of the Dead is. Like, and they, you know.
I mean, this is obviously incredibly influential, and this is the Kevin Smith of zombies, you know.
Yeah,
a really early indie movie that had incredible success, but at the time he didn't know how to make deals, and so that $30 million, he didn't see hardly any of it.
Yeah, this movie succeeded despite itself because it could have easily veered into Ed Wood territory. Yeah.
And it wasn't a zombie movie.
Right.
He never called them zombies.
No.
Ghouls.
We all
ghouls,
die.
Yeah.
We call them undead.
It's Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
This is what made the modern zombie, but it wasn't a zombie at the time.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like Kurt Siodomak wrote all the rules for the Wolfman.
Yeah.
Well, he wrote all the rules for the, quote, zombie.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's Romero. Okay. Did. Yeah, yeah. Kurt Siodomak, he made up all that.
That's cool.
Wolfbane, he made it all.
Yeah.
Silver Bullet.
Why not? That's fine.
So that's what Romero did with us too.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So there's a scene where she looks up and there's like a half eaten face, it's full frame in the camera, and like I said, it was on Channel 11, and I was like, I don't know, 9, and I was like, I don't want to watch this movie anymore. Like, that is a half eaten face on my TV. And then she is attacked.
See, I'm a glass half full guy. I tend to think of it as a half uneaten face.
Oh, good, good. You know? That's nice.
There's still
of
plenty
you.
Of face left.
Yeah,
there.
right.
Saving that for later.
Right. Yeah. So then she is attacked by the farmhands and whoever has been. And they don't really tell you. Like, obviously, now we know that once you're bitten, you're infected, and there's no, you have no idea.
Right.
Like, you don't know the rules of a zombie movie yet.
This was the first movie to show zombies eating other people.
Yes.
Like, so before, you weren't worried about getting eaten by zombies, and the camp.
Well, the zombies weren't zombie. Like, they weren't flesh-eating creatures. They were just...
Right, but any... But
they were
any,
just undead.
Yeah, but any of the other movies, like the older movies, like, they had never had people eating each other, so that was another
thing.
Now
this to worry about,
set up,
too.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And this, actually, here is when we're introduced to Ben, who, in my opinion, is probably one of the greatest heroes in movies, because he's...
that heroic.
He's not heroic, but he also he takes charge and he start you know he starts leading this. First, he gets the zombies out of the house, and he's smart, and he does not really put up with Barbara, who is losing her mind.
Punches her out.
Yeah, yeah.
Knocks her out. 60 style.
Yeah. So, you know, so if you listen, I got a lot of insight from Romero, did a commentary on this movie. And so the original character was supposed to be a truck driver, tough guy, big, burly.
Yeah.
And they cast this guy as Ben, who is just a phenomenal actor and a really smart guy. He was really smart in real life. Yeah. So he decided to play the character like an intellectual rather than a big, tough, you know, truck driver type guy. And so all that is him creating that character.
Yeah,
and it's a phenomenal job.
And he did not, that actor did not want to hit Barbara.
Yeah.
Because
oh, really?
He was like, he's like, I am
a black man in 1968.
African American man in a leading role in 1968, and she is a white blonde woman.
Right.
This is not gonna go over.
Yeah.
And they said, No, go ahead, do it.
Yeah, you're all right, you'll be fine.
But he didn't want to he was trying to like he even on the scenes where he's like kind of violent.
Yeah.
He's reluctant, but I think that helps the role.
I think that's true. Yeah. Because of his reluctance.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, we don't have that here. It's so weird. If you watch The Walking Dead, there's a character on there, Morgan, and the way he's playing it, like that's his character now, he's Ben.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why nobody's caught this.
It's weird.
Like, he doesn't want to hurt anybody. Like he's not killing zombies because he thinks that they're, you know, they're still people. And he is definitely referencing that character 100%.
Yeah.
So that character still resonates today. So he ends up clearing out the house and they're trying to, you know, barricade themselves in. Nobody knows what's going on. There's no information. They find a TV upstairs. They wheel that down. You know, they bring it downstairs and there's news reports that pretty much is just saying what we've always seen. It's like, just stay inside. Don't, you know, if you have any loved ones or anything, keep them closed. Do whatever.
Was this one of the first movies to really rely on news reports for exposition?
That I can remember.
For budgetary reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did a hell of a job in making the world go to hell with one guy sitting there in a suit just talking to you.
Right. That's just such a common thing these days to provide your exposition through media like that. Within the framework of a film, and I was watching this, I'm like, boy, I remember like in old movies, like the kind of plot specific radios that they would turn on with, like, you know, there are two escape convicts in the backseat of your car, you know, but this was more than that.
They're giving like on scene interviews, like they're interviewing the Hicks sheriff, or they're interviewing just people in general. Like I think they talk to like there's a government scene, like where they're talking to like a council meeting or something.
But
everything
about
is done.
The outbreak. Yeah, they tell you what's going on in the world around you.
When you talk about being low budget, I made a joke to my wife when we were watching it, because Ben starts giving his backstory and he's like, oh, I did this and then I stole this car and then I crashed and it exploded, and I'm like, this movie is so low budget. He just described an action scene.
We don't have the money for it, so we're just going
to
tell you.
Yeah, one car to blow up.
There's a problem with the remake, so they show you that.
They show you everything.
I figure
if they get around to even touching the original plot of a film.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but
there was a comic book from Avatar, who does all kinds of like horror licensing, that tells the backstory of Ben. Like the first like six issues is Ben getting to the house.
Gotcha.
And it's actually not bad. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, a little, I didn't have to pay, you know, $20 to go see it as a movie. Like, I just pick it up as a book. It's pretty good. Anyway,
at $3 an issue, which works out to
$20.
Pretty close.
$20. I bought it in trade. So it was like, $9.
Good.
I know how to work the game. It's
and then I thought it was also a weird scene, because I know, just because I did some reading, and I know that there's like, they had to cut 8 minutes from the film, the producers, you know, pressure, and then the bulk of it comes, there's a really weird jump cut between two characters we haven't met yet that are in the basement.
Yes.
And there's a really, because I noticed at the time, I was like, well, that's an odd cut, you know? But I thought it was weird that when they're going to cut footage from the movie, there's like 4 minutes where Barbara basically retells the first 4 minutes of the film. And I'm like, that's where you trim.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought that was a really weird choice.
I wonder if you, like, we've talked before where Psycho kind of changed the way you see films.
Right.
You know, so I was wondering, because I think the same way. I was like, I wonder if you just kind of left it in if people came in late.
Right.
You know, like, why are they here? Why?
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, that's a good theory.
Stuff I've heard with not that specific scene, they could hear the camera.
Oh.
The audio, there's mistakes where you have to, and with a movie that budget, you got to remember film itself. The actual film itself is not cheap.
Right.
Today, when people make the films, you know, on their digital phones or anything, it's so easy to edit.
Yeah, Romero filmed this almost on one take for every scene. They just didn't have the money.
He didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
So as we're getting all this information, there's a noise behind them, and this is where we're introduced to boyfriend, girlfriend. Their names are Tom and Judy.
Tom and Judy. Yeah.
And then a husband and wife, and we don't really. And we are told of a daughter.
Yes,
but we don't see the daughter until much later.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, the husband comes up and he is just...
Wait a minute. You're talking about the young couple or are you talking about Mr. Cooper?
Mr. Cooper.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't see... There's reference of a daughter that the daughter is sick.
Gotcha.
But she's down in the basement, right. But you don't see her until you're supposed to see her.
Yeah.
Does anyone think that... Was it Harry? Is that the Mr.
Harry,
Cooper?
Yeah.
He looks like Rob Corddry.
Yes.
I'm like, that is totally Rob Corddry in reincarnated in a different life.
I thought the exact same
looks
thing.
The guy that they got to play that character in the remake also looks just like
both
of them.
Yes.
Because I'm just like, that's so weird that this is in, 68? And I'm like, that's Rob Corddry.
That was Tom Tolles.
Oh, it was. You're right. Yeah.
He just passed away last year.
Right? And he looks kind of a friend of mine. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But they all look identical. It's a funny...
He was good, though. You know, actually, what's funny is he's a big man.
He was in the House
man.
Of a Thousand Corpses?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He was a cop.
Yeah.
And so it was funny watching the remake. He seems like a small guy.
Right.
But, I mean, he's
playing against Tony Todd, who was also a giant man.
Correct.
So
he's bigger.
Back to the other. Yeah, back to the other one. He's playing there's Ben, who's pretty much taken charge. Like, he took charge because he didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
He had this hysterical woman next to him, and he's like, I'm not going to die.
He's been boarding up a house by himself for the past 20 minutes.
Right. I didn't know there was anyone else, four or five other people.
All of them walk up, and of course, Harry, is that his name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Starts trying to take charge. Yeah. And Ben's like, no.
Where were you? Did you not hear us up here screaming, boarding things up?
No,
hear
me? No, none of it. I could have used some help up here. He's like, well, you seem to have it covered. You're all right.
Yeah.
It's like I used to do that with my mom, would bring home groceries. I'd be asleep on the couch, and I'm like, I'm just going to pretend like I'm...
Is that the last bag?
Oh, I had no idea.
You know, I kind of get it, though, because I think this is the same thing as when I talked about John Krakauer in Everest, you know, and him being like, well, I'm cold. I mean, either we all die or, you know, we conserve our energy and stay alive. I mean, they were in the house first. They're escaping for their lives, you know, by, you know,
he's also
their pants.
He has an injured daughter.
Yeah,
as well.
They're downstairs trying to stay alive. And of course, if they hear a bunch of ruckus and screaming and zombies attacking, they're not going to come up and help.
Right.
Like, I was totally on Harry's side, as much of a jerk as that guy
is.
Like, Ben was just like,
you're on Harry's side until about 10 minutes.
Yeah, he's
later.
A total asshole. But in that case, I'm like, dude, Ben, like, everyone's trying to stay alive. Like,
I see both sides of the argument.
Yeah. I just was like, calm down. It's like,
you're supposed to.
But that
you're supposed to see both sides.
And this movie reminded me very much of a Twilight Zone episode.
Yep.
It's less about what's actually happening and more about how people are reacting to what's happening.
Now I'm going to stop you because that makes me so mad. I'm so tired of people going, I liked that movie. It was about the people, not the zombies. They're all about the people.
Right. Yeah.
They're all, and I liked World War Z. Because it was about the zombies.
Yes.
And it wasn't about the people. I'm a monster guy.
Right.
I don't care about people. They're supposed to die in movies.
Yeah.
So you're going to spend 20 minutes of my life building me up for him to go, get killed?
Yeah.
Right.
The finding out what the monster is, exploring how to kill it, exploring where it goes, where does it stay? Mm-hmm. That is interesting. That's mystery.
Right.
There's no mystery how people interact to me.
I think, I agree. To a point, the way I like my horror films is I like not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have a creature where you're like, I don't know what to do with. Like, you think you have an idea with it, and then you can't beat it.
Right.
You know, like your mindset is like, okay, so fire, right? We'll try fire, and then fire doesn't work, or we'll try bullets, and then bullets don't work.
Right.
Good Lord.
I agree with that, but I think is that the character's talking about the mystery, about how do we do it, not about how they don't like each other.
To me,
if we were sitting down here and this happened, we would not be fighting with each other. we'd be fighting with what's outside trying to
see,
come
and
in.
I, you don't it, know that's but, the but yes, that's the I question know, and you I
would
think that
I would disagree because I think
Tom would be underneath that desk over there.
Yeah, Tom,
I'm acting like he's sleeping.
I get to you later.
Yeah,
that's what I'd feel about. I get to you later.
Yeah, I think what I really liked about this fight is that they both were making valid points.
Oh no, yeah, I agree.
And that I think that's where the fighting would start is that. They're both trying to accomplish the same thing. They just vehemently disagree about what's going to be the best avenue.
But I don't have as much problem with Night of Living Dead, though, because while they're doing that, they are still trying to figure out the TV reports or what
right.
I like. They're trying to figure out what the heck is going on, as opposed to when you get to the later where they know what's going on.
And then
it does become more and more and more.
By the time you get to Day of the Dead, it's just about the people.
Because
ironically is my favorite one.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
because like this wasn't a personality clash really so much. This was a fundamental disconnect in what these two people thought the best way to handle the situation.
It's the teleprompter going down.
Right. Mm.
That's what it is. It's a teleprompter going down. The teleprompter goes down. People are no longer in a society that's stable.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And I thought it was really interesting that that especially for a movie of this era, race never played a role
because it wasn't written for a black man.
Yeah, right. but it would have been really
they
easy
had to rewrite the whole thing.
But this is where people start to read into it.
Correct,
because Romero's even said he's like, I was just making a movie.
Yeah, he's right.
Like, I was like, making a.
Dwayne was the best actor we knew. That's why they hired.
Yeah,
him.
Right. They did not go. Oh, you know, this is totally representative of, and analogous to, race relations. It's like, nope.
No, I was just making a movie.
And so they were writing that movie, so they didn't
care. We see that.
I think that's the beauty of this movie.
Yeah.
It's like, I had no, he says, I was making a movie, and you made a movie that came out at the right time. You
just
featured a black actor who is your main character. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. That was not existent in 1968.
I think it'd be more racist to make a point of it.
Yeah.
As opposed to like it just is what it just, is.
It's well,
just,
he was being as non-racist as possible, which was cool. Yeah, it is really neat that
and it just and turned even, in it turned into that.
Yeah.
Because you're waiting for Cooper.
You're
waiting for him to say something because he's a jerk beginning.
Yeah, right.
And never happens because
I thought it was going to take that turn.
I think they do say something in the remake.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong. It's been years since I've seen that movie. I thought that he was kind of, they turned that character. So the way they played it originally is he's kind of subdued. Like, he is an asshole, but he's kind of subdued. And I felt like in the original one, they turned that up to 11. I could be wrong. I could be just remembering it differently. Maybe.
The thing with the remake is that what most people don't understand is that that is Romero's movie.
Right.
That's not Savini's movie.
Romero was
supposed to do that, and he wanted to do it to make his money.
Yeah,
he wanted to make his money.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted to do.
Sure.
Because he never did make his money, and he's like, well, I'm going to remake it.
If anybody's going to remake it, why wouldn't it be me?
But he couldn't because he was either doing, I think it was Monkey Shines, or he was contracted to do something else. So what he did, he's like, well, I'll produce it. I'll let Savini direct it, since it's mostly effects and things like that anyway. And
that's
so that is his movie.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't think people, they kind of poo-poo it. I'm like, well, it's the original guy.
Yeah,
It's almost like the people are complaining about the Thing remakes. That's based on a book.
Right.
It's who goes there.
Yeah.
Right.
I got it. And actually Carpenter's is more like the book.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
But
so
I'll have all those versions because they're
agreed.
You're taking one medium and transplanting it to another one.
You got to do some stuff. You got to make some changes. You got to do what you know.
Right. And people that think I'm butthurt about the remakes, and I'm like, well, what's your favorite book? Would you like me to rewrite that for you?
Right. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
It is interesting that you don't see that.
Right.
People don't rewrite books.
No.
They'll remake movies.
They'll make a movie.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which I never have a problem with
over
if it's based on a book.
I've never
over
thought
and over
about
and over.
That before.
Yeah.
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 What a weird concept.
Yeah. Like, when you hear about, like, let's rewrite this book, you're like, well, that's a crazy
idea. That would be insane. Yeah.
Well,
unless you're talking about, like, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
But even that, but they...
Abraham Lincoln Vampire
put a,
Hunter.
They put a twist on it.
They twist it.
Yeah.
Or they just to rewrite it.
Or when they tell a story from a different angle.
Right.
Like, there's the Wind Done Gone, which is like the Gone with the Wind from the point of view of the slave.
Yeah.
And, you have your Grendel, which is... Beowulf from the point of view of
Grendel.
Yeah.
Oh, 50 Shades of Grey from the perspective of...
Of the whip.
Are they doing that with Twilight?
Twilight's gender swapping.
Gender swapped, and 50 Shades redid it from the point of view of her.
Of the guy.
of Gray.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then I think they're doing another one, yeah, from the point of view of the dildo. Yeah. Oh, no, wait. Light, that is the same one from the point of view of the guy.
Light and dark.
You can't understand the dialogue.
Yeah. It's just it's very muffled.
Yeah. That wasn't me. Don't look at me. That was Kevin.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't even. I was
creepy.
I did the light, dark, light, dark.
Yeah.
My cough is contagious.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So we, there's a showdown kind of where they're everybody's at odds. And they kind of, the Judy and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Tom.
Kind of, and the wife too, are all just kind of like, he's not wrong. Like, we should probably just stay up here if we're stronger in numbers.
Right.
If we split up.
And the guy's just, I mean, the guy does have a daughter downstairs. So it's sort
correct.
Of, you can't like, yeah. if the daughter wasn't downstairs, it's not, it would be entirely self-serving.
Right.
But the guy's like, no, we're better off. We've got, door.
Right. Well, I don't think there is a door. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like
they've got one entrance into the basement.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Is what
he's
saying. It's right. So we could cover that.
Yeah. And then Ben saying,
which is a good point. That means there's only one way out.
Right.
Ben,
that's Ben's point of view. Where we're stuck.
But he's also thinking, he's also thinking, plus they have a human buffet in between us.
Right.
So
right.
I'm going to go downstairs.
I think I'll be okay down there.
Now, that's a great point. They both make great points. Yeah, and that's the problem.
They're like,
no one's a bad guy. It's just perspective.
Right.
That's all it is.
So it's a team up at this point. They start bringing all the furniture down from upstairs. They start boarding up all of the windows.
Montage.
And then they realize that we've got a truck. We're just out of gas.
Yeah.
So there's a gas pump like up the hill further away, but it's locked.
So they have a plan.
There's a plan in place where they're
the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Fine.
What's the worst that could happen? The plan is, okay, so at this point, the zombies have started to converge on the house.
Living Dead?
Yeah. Living Dead has started to converge upon the house. And so they start kind of breaking in, and there's like a battle to keep them out. Mm-hmm. Ben ends up taking a chair, sets it on fire, and kind of just like throws it out there to lure them off the house and so they can fix things back up. So at this point, you realize, okay, they don't like fire. So we've got something that we can work with.
So bring that fire along to the gas station.
Let's bring that torch to the gas station with us.
That should work out fine.
Right. So the plan now is, okay, I will go out with a torch and get them off of you. You go to the gas station, you fill up the truck, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back and we'll get out of here. The problem they have is that they can't find the keys. Do they know that it's like, this is where I always forget this part. Do they know that it's
they
locked?
They find a bunch of keys.
Is that what it
they
is?
They know it's locked, and they're trying to.
Okay,
figure
they
out
just
which
have like one big key.
They should have just checked the visor. That's where the key is. Always.
Like, if Terminator 2 has taught me anything,
they haven't invented that trope yet.
It's
just a device to get them out there.
I thought maybe Romero invented that too. Yeah. I don't know. He invented a lot of stuff.
So they get in the truck, and it's Judy and her boyfriend and
Tom.
Yeah, just those two.
Just call him Punch.
So they get up to the gas station. And they can't, like, they cannot figure out which key it is. And it's a pretty tense moment where, like, mm-hmm. the zombie, so that Ben has kind of cleared the path, but because the truck has taken off, they've kind of started to follow the truck. And the zombies are closing in on the truck, and it's a pretty tense moment. And then
I like they just shoots the lock off
Tom,
with a shotgun.
Tom out of nowhere is like, I got
pump.
It. And like brings out a 12 gauge shotgun and shoots the gas
I'm like,
pump.
You just shot a gas pump.
And everybody
just,
dies.
And it's so and with a shotgun, which sprays, you know,
it
like
doesn't matter.
I know. I just
any
love that it
gun,
shoots the lock off.
Yeah. Any sort of bullet at a gas pump.
Right. Right.
Never a good idea.
But no, it just cleanly shoots the lock off.
Yeah.
That's great.
And then it completely blows up. Everything with the truck blows up. The gas pump blows up. And this is all. I think this is also
not
the first
related to that shotgun, though.
No,
I mean, he didn't
what?
Well, I'm just saying he didn't shoot the lock off.
He
said then everything blows up.
The
so
shotgun
like,
isn't the reason why it blows up.
It wasn't related to that.
He's like spills gas.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
He goes to fill up the.
I was thinking of the remake.
Yeah, he goes to fill up the tank, and he's like, he's just frantic, and he takes the gas off, and he's trying to put it in. He can't get it in the hole. But no problem. I don't know. But then the gas pump is on, and it's just
like spraying gas
and the flames from.
I think ultimately the biggest mistake when they were filling the gas tank up was going for the car wash.
Yeah, you know? That's.
I don't understand that.
They're trying to save the.
You save 20 cents a gallon when you get the car wash.
1 cent per gallon. Yeah, this time.
Well, they went for the ultimate. It's like, you know, that Rain-X is going to take forever.
Right. Right.
But that's going to help repel zombie blood off your windshield.
That's
right.
Yeah. Truck looked immaculate before it blew up.
Just before it blew up.
So, yeah, then it all blows up. Tom and Judy are like, oh, we got to drive off, get it away from the pump, right? Everything's going to be fine. So the truck is kind of on fire, and they drive away, and then Tom's like, we got to get out of here, and she can't get her seatbelt off. Yeah, so it's like, oh, that sucks. Yeah. And he goes back in for her, and then you see, boom.
And then at this point, the zombies have converged on the truck.
What a touching moment in this film, because if you think about it, it's so rare for a zombie to get a hot cooked meal.
I know, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And some really good barbecue.
Yeah, uh-huh, and I just thought, what a sweet moment.
He's just looking out for him. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
Nice. I still like the moment where she takes the bug off the tree and eats it.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a nice touch.
One of the best moments in that movie.
That's the wife.
And that is Karen, right?
Yeah.
That's the wife.
Yeah.
They just tried to save money.
Oh, man.
And
it's all the same
and
people.
She apparently did her own makeup. Uh-huh. That was her doing that makeup.
Oh, really?
She looked gross. And yeah.
Yeah. And you know the entrails in this movie? You know what those were?
The sausage, wasn't it?
No. They were entrails.
Oh, really?
He used them in all three movies. They went to the butcher shop and got them.
It was always
a story. I'm tired of hearing the story. Every movie has the same story. Somebody unplugged their fridge. I know it's a joke.
Yeah.
Because then the stuff spoils.
Right.
So then, like, I know Joe Pilato, or what his name is, in the Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was
all
rotten.
Yeah.
So when he was yelling, that was real. Yeah. He was getting sick.
Vile.
It's still a vile scene.
Yeah, in fact, when you see the making of, and they're like, and then they cut, everybody's like, boo.
Yeah, that's gross. Like,
out of here.
Yeah.
And they apparently used Bosco chocolate syrup for blood. Yeah. So they had chocolate covered
ham.
Yum, 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 yum.
It was mostly ham is what I read. Because they used a lot of ham.
I just know what
but,
I read.
But like,
you
like
guys
the
ham,
know
more than me.
Yeah, the ham, like a flesh and stuff, has like the right consistency.
But chocolate and entrails.
Chocolate syrup was very common for blood in black and white movies because it has the same consistency of blood.
Psycho is the famous
one. That's why he shot in black and white.
Right.
But there's a shot where one of the undead are eating, biting into a liver.
Yeah.
And as they're biting into it, they look dead at the camera like, you get a cut?
No.
And it
okay.
looks like if you watch it, he's got that big hunk of liver, and all of a sudden he looks right at the camera like,
and it actually works. Like it's effective because he's looking at the camera. Like,
yeah, but he's
God.
Like, oh, okay, you're not cutting.
Yeah, yeah, I will say I was really surprised at how much gore I was getting in a.
There's a lot of it
in a movie from this era.
Yeah,
you know, like clearly it's an independent movie because they would have never a studio would have
like,
never.
No, made no, 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 no. Yeah. We're not doing
what
that.
What did you get for intestines?
There were films like Spider Baby came out, had a severed ear, and there was a lot more stuff that was going on. They were starting to push envelopes.
Yep.
And there was random nudity in it. I mean, were there many horror movies? I mean, now in the horror genre, you see that all the time. But in this movie, there is a naked woman just walking one of the zombies.
They said they had a lady. She'd be like, oh, I'll do it.
But is this one of the first times you saw random nudity like that?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just
so... Yeah, but it also kind of made sense. Yeah. Like, it's not like it was
it's fine. I'm just saying, like...
a zombie.
For the 60s, like, I'm just like, it's... Why was that? It was just gratuitous.
It's jarring because it is like...
I remember there's a Rod Steiger film called The Pawnbroker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Sidney Lumet film, right? 64, 65, and that has nudity in it actually.
Okay,
but
it wasn't gratuitous.
Like, was it just random, or was it for a purpose?
Well, there was nudity before, but
you didn't get very much nudity.
I'm thinking the horror genre.
Yeah, if you're looking for horror,
just for horror movies having boobs, just randomly.
It was pretty rare. I think to get that much nudity at all in movies, back then. And so, but yeah, because I remember watching
American. Anyway.
The Fulci
stuff.
But I mean, other countries don't count. You know that.
Well, but, plus their commercials.
Bolivia.
Bolivia.
But I just remember watching The Pawnbroker, and it was like from 64, 65, and just not even. And he's like going to, I think, a prostitute. And it was just like, and all of a sudden, she just gets him out. And I was like, whoa.
Hey.
Was not expecting that for a movie that predates The Monkees.
Yeah. Boobs.
That is a good point, though. I wonder what movie was the first movie to show nudity in a regular film.
Maniac was in Maniac, 1930.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of...
I was thinking of the other Maniac. I was like, that was 1930?
Films got a lot edgier in the 30s before the Hayes Commission stepped in. And so the Hayes Commission stepped in because movies were
Maniac, there's naked women wrestling. Yeah, they spoon out a cat's eye.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, no, like, it's just kind of like, there was like the Wild West back then.
Yeah.
We can film it. Let's try it. Why not?
Let's see what happens.
So now we are back at the house, and it's kind of this moment of despair where it's like, well, there goes our plan, I guess.
There's a truck.
Wasn't Harry, nothing. Is this when like Harry wouldn't let Ben back in too?
Yeah, like there's a, so Ben runs out to kind of ward off the horde, and now Harry's like, no. Like, there's a moment where he's like, I'm not. And then I'm trying to think who...
He barricades the door.
Yeah, but does he kind of say to him, somebody's like, all right, fine, and lets him back in? Or does somebody like get
does
on
Ben,
him?
Does Ben like knock the door down? Or
he no.
He doesn't? I thought he like busts in, they fight or something.
He does fight. That's true.
I thought it was the wife. I thought it was the wife.
That's what I thought too.
Cooper wouldn't let him in. He was scared, and the wife said, what are you doing?
Right.
Yeah.
So Ben comes in, and then
I haven't seen this for a while, but I think
that's right.
And then he does get back in
and lays out Cooper,
and they're looking at each other, and they're like kind of both on the same side, trying to barricade the door and get it secured.
And they do get it secured,
and then
Ben's like, "You son of a..." And then this is the scene where they're like, he's like, "That's it, I'm done. Like, you're on your own. We're going back downstairs." Mm-hmm. And everybody, the husband and wife, go back downstairs, and then this is where we are introduced to the daughter.
Well, no, because this is when
Judy goes down to take care of her for the first time.
Well, right?
Because before
she went to go stand next to her.
Yeah.
Judy goes down to relieve the mother, and then Harry and them go upstairs. So,
okay.
So we learned about that twist a little earlier.
That's right. Okay. We don't know that she's. We don't know anything.
She's just a sick daughter.
Yeah, right.
At this point,
she's
on the TV. Did they say that she got bit?
I thought they said that one of them.
Or that she was just sick.
I thought she had a fever.
No, they do say that she gets bit
because they're attacking the car. And,
originally, they say that she's sick or not feeling well, right. And then in a scene later, it's revealed that the one of them bit her.
There you go.
Very subtly, but they say it
is very subtle. Okay. Like I was really impressed at how like it just kind of almost glides right by you. Like if you weren't like I was listening for him because as soon as I heard she was sick, I was like, wait, is she going to be a zombie? That was where my head went instantly. And then I'm sure in 1968,
no one would have thought that
is not
then,
where
no.
my head would have went.
It wasn't one of the rules.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't know
that. This is the rule.
This is the first time you see a quote unquote zombie biting people and turning them into zombies.
But you don't even know the bite turned her.
Right.
All you know is that when people die, they come back.
So the bite
might have made her sick or whatever. But true. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think the news footage does eventually tell you that that's...
If they're bit, you need to get them...
That it turns you.
Right. And I like that the news footage eventually comes on when on the TV when they're learning more, and they're like, you need to shoot them in the head to kill them. Like, boom, another... I mean, he did write all the rules. Yeah. It's so cool to see them...
Sever the brain.
...being written in front of you. Yeah, like,
That whole scene where it's like the sheriff and the reporter talking to each other, that entire scene
they're messed
improvised.
Up.
Yeah.
He's like, they're all messed up. Beat them and burn them. And those two guys, I mean, Romero's like,
they said just do whatever you would do.
And they improvise that.
That's awesome.
Scene.
That's cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, the one guy was Chill Willis. Wasn't that the, he was, wasn't he a Pittsburgh, news guy?
Yeah. He was on a horror show. He was like a local, was a news guy and also hosted one of the local, you know, like horror shows.
And then
Chiller
Theater.
Oh, cool.
The daughter in Day of the Dead was related to him somehow.
Oh, really? The daughter in Day of the Dead.
The actress's name.
Okay.
She was in real life.
I thought the news footage seemed very authentic for the period.
It felt very real.
Like, that's always one of my complaints. Even now in movies, when you see the news footage, I'm like, you don't feel like a newscaster, but these people felt like newscasters.
Yeah,
it was good.
So now we've gotten to the point where the zombies, there are a lot of them and they are attacking the house. And we see Johnny has now shown it. Like, he is, beat his way into the house.
Well, that's,
there's the gun scene.
Yeah. This is where the moment, like before, Harry goes back downstairs.
Right.
There's like a face off between, what's his name?
Ben.
And Harry. Yeah. Ben and Harry. Yeah. And Ben's got the rifle and Ben shoots Harry.
Oh, that's right. He does shoot Harry.
He shoots him.
I always like it's so
point
I've seen,
blank.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
no, like
which, is, which is so which is yeah. It's so
like this, that's why I say
very
he's,
odd
not,
is,
he's not
hero, yeah, because he point blank murders him. And like, sure, they had their disagreements or whatever, and Harry was trying to get the gun.
Well, it was after, yeah, like after he
they were wrestling the gun away
let him in and stuff like that. But
still, yeah, they're wrestling for the gun, and you know, I think Harry is kind of like, I don't think Harry was necessarily saying I'm going to murder you. No. I took it as he was like, okay, I'm in charge now, kind of pointing the gun at Ben.
Right.
But then they wrestle, and then Ben gets the gun, looks at him, and he just shoots him.
Romero could not have killed him without him doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
He had to kill him.
Yeah.
To do that. I mean, you can't just take that character away.
Right, without him,
without there being a reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
That's show he's human, too.
Right. Yeah. And he does. He does, like, point blank, just like...
But he crawls down...
I am so done arguing with this guy.
Yeah.
But he crawls down in the basement.
And he gets downstairs.
And meanwhile, the wife is pretty preoccupied with zombies busting through the doors and the windows. But I'm like, she didn't even really care. She had other stuff going on, but she looks and she's like, oh, okay, there's zombies getting in. I'm like, wow, that was your husband.
That was odd. I noticed in their scene in the basement, she's got a line, and I don't remember exactly what it is, but I really got the vibe that there was...
That relationship wasn't...
Oh, she was
greatest.
Done with him. Yeah.
There were already, like, marital problems there.
Right,
and the
right,
guy
right.
was a huge jerk, you could tell. He was commanding her around, telling her what to do, and obviously back in that time period, that was more prevalent than, you know, now that would totally not fly with people watching this movie.
Well, but, yeah, this guy actually had the air of somebody who, like, had always been in charge. And
correct.
Everybody listened to him,
and
now nobody's listening.
Well, I think he was in charge until the crap hit the fan, and when it came right down to it, he just couldn't do it.
No.
Like, he was faced with a crisis, and he buckled.
Yeah. She had a very, like, blank stare on her face. When he goes upstairs at one point and tells her what to do or whatever, and he walks up, and she's just looking. She's like, you could tell she wasn't there. Like, she's just
So I'm trying to think. This is where, there's another point where I kind of get things mixed up. The scene where the daughter turns. Mm-hmm.
Well, at
Tom,
this point, Johnny, they're all busting
Johnny
through the door. Karen and Barbara are next to the doors and the windows, and all the arms are busting through.
Yeah.
And they break the boards down, and you see Johnny walk up. And Barbara is so wanting to get her brother back, you know, in the beginning
it's
of the
weird,
movie. She's like, find him.
It's
you
weird
know?
That you say, because, like, she does go through, like, these weird character beats where she's kind of timid and she's meek, and then she gets to the house and she's kind of, again, she's. Where Ben's like, I don't have time to deal with you, so I'm just going to punch you in the face, and then I'll deal with you. And then she kind of has a character turn where she becomes stronger, and she's starting to fight back. And then as soon as she sees her brother, she goes right back to like that meek, like, there's my brother.
She was stunned. Like,
and now we lose Barbara.
She, like, wanted to go to him because
she
loves
him.
Right. And, like, she probably could have gotten away, ran, whatever. But, like, as soon as she sees him, she's like, Johnny, still trying to talk to him.
Right.
Still
and
trying
they,
to.
They pull Barbara out of the house.
But he pulls her, like, and we're going to eat you now.
And now you're dead. Now you're gone.
On a technical level, that's funny because if the voiceover wouldn't have said his name, if he wasn't wearing those gloves, I would have known.
No, I think it was the only reason I knew was because of the gloves.
The gloves, yeah.
Because I remember when he was putting the gloves on. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the movie, I'm like, why is he putting gloves on?
Yeah. Which are in the remake, too. With
They are, aren't they?
Yeah, what's his name? I can never remember his name, and I know him. But he's in the Rob Zombie movies, too. Yeah. But he was Johnny. Oh, he played the guy in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 with the steel head.
Mosley.
Yeah,
Bill Mosley.
Bill Mosley.
He is. Yeah, that's right.
Bill Mosley was also the main bad guy in Army of Darkness. He has a big.
Oh, he was the Bruce Campbell.
You never see his. He's a demon.
Yeah,
Bruce Campbell fights.
That's
awesome.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
okay.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. That.
Really? Bill Mosley. If they ever do a Charlie Manson biopic, there's your Charlie Manson. Like he, if you watch Devil's Rejects, looks just like him. Like identical. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we lose Barbara, and we Barbara's at this gone. Point we are losing characters left and right.
Karen runs downstairs,
and then I think the daughter is
she's a
off.
Touching family moment.
She's eating the dad.
Yeah, it's a reunion.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she sees. Yeah, the daughter
Harry,
is off,
Karen,
off,
the, daughter
off the table.
Now.
Yeah,
and she is feasting on her father.
Yeah.
And then
she stands up and like.
Well, as a parent, it's your job to support your children.
That's true.
Yeah. You're supposed to put food in their mouths.
Yeah, that's it.
And he was a dick. So.
That's,
well, I don't know that you're supposed to put that in their mouths.
No. Hold on. Let me step back here for a second.
That's exactly what I thought, too.
Yeah, this took an odd turn.
And he was a huge jerk.
Creepy.
Heaven.
All right.
Yeah.
I edit this show, so none of this is getting.
It's going to sound like I said it. Is what it's going to come down to.
Creepy Kevin.
So at this point, Karen breaks. Like she's mentally gone.
Yeah.
And this is another scene where the zombie picks up a weapon.
Yeah.
She stabs her with a trowel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember watching this. again at like 9, 10, somewhere in there. And like the sound effect that they use. So not only does it sound like she's being stabbed, but like there's that high pitched scream.
Yeah.
I don't really, I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Squeal with a delay on it.
Just so unnerving because they use like they splatter blood across the, and it's also the only time that like blood is implied. You don't really see any blood in this movie until she stabs Karen, and then you know that's kind of they.
You see blood when they shoot people.
Do you?
Yeah, you do.
Like
when he's shooting the zombies,
they use,
you
like
see
squibs,
like squibs. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but like you don't. But it's not like it's contained inside the. This one is like splattered across a wall,
right, true.
Which also becomes a trope later in horror movies
all
for eternity. Is like we don't really want. We don't have the money to show you what's going to happen, so we're just going to take a bucket of blood and throw it on a wall, and you can just figure it out from there.
I think and it's so effective too. I love that. I mean, even and I mean, I know that no one really liked this movie, but in Fantastic Four, when Dr. Doom is just like.
People's brains are blowing out into the wall.
He's using
a power on people that he never uses later on the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I just love that effect, though. It's like they're still using that today.
Yeah,
and that's
totally,
so effective. When you see blood splatter onto a wall, you're just like, ugh.
It's a cheap way around it.
So now Ben is kind of on his own. He had like he's got himself. Does he barricade himself in the basement?
Right.
He shoots everybody in the basement.
The one place he was saying was the worst place he could go.
And so now we've got we open up on the daytime, like the night he's survived the night. We're brought back to like the Hick sheriffs and like his posse of people. And they're coming up on the house.
The cleanup crew.
They're coming out the house, and there's zombies still kind of walking around. They're picking them off, and
they're controlling the situation. They know how to take them out. There's forces out there,
right? So then Ben comes upstairs, and you know he's like, "Oh, all right."
He hears sirens.
We're gonna be all right. Like he's made it. We've made it. We're gonna get through this. And he looks through the window, and you see one of the Hicks. That are, you know, he's like, hey, we got movement.
There's one.
He's like, boom. And then there goes Ben.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Ben is murdered by the Southern piece of crap sheriff and his little posse.
But again, I loved how they did this. Yeah. That it wasn't like there was no
happy ending.
Racial motivation.
Nope.
They were just like he
was shuffling around. They thought he was a zombie.
Yeah, it wasn't racially motivated.
Like you know, and it really wasn't even a degree of incompetence. It was just like they were just going around killing zombies. It was very matter of fact.
The scene that is, in my opinion, is the hardest to watch in this movie is the last scene that's in a still frame of all of the sheriffs with the hooks.
Yes,
and so like they refused to touch the bodies. Even though Ben wasn't infected,
but they don't know.
They don't know that, right? Yeah,
yeah. As you, as a film watcher, you
see it all.
It's all snapshots,
right? So they've got Ben on hooks, and they're throwing Ben's body into the flames.
Yeah.
And it's just, like I remember watching that, and it's the first time I ever remember in a movie just being like,
oh,
so that was a real regular person.
It's not even that. Like I became attached. Like you know, I didn't watch movies like this. Right. You know, like I became attached. When I become attached to a character, that character survives.
Yeah, he was the only protagonist that we really had at that point.
This is
a very early twist/spoiler. Like, you know, that he dies in the end because he's the hero he's supposed to live.
I thought the snapshots were really nice touch. And again, I know that Romero wasn't really trying to necessarily make a statement.
Right.
But those snapshots were all the more eerie because they looked like the snapshots of all those lynching
but
photos.
But he accepts that. He knows that now.
Yeah.
I mean, he accepts it all now, and I think he's proud of it now.
Yeah.
But, but I think what he's proud of is I wasn't even thinking about that. It's the fact that me and my crew didn't care about that stuff.
Right, right.
Like, to me, I've always said Blazing Saddles is one of the greatest things for race relations. Because you laugh at each other.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody is on trial there. And I think that you can't make these movies today.
No.
People are too touchy about it. Absolutely not. When you quit laughing, you're done.
Yeah. Right.
If I can't make a joke about you or about you and you can't make one about me, you know, well, then we're done.
Right.
We're done. This movie was not political. It was I Am Legend.
Yeah.
It's I Am Legend. It's Richard Matheson who wrote almost everything we still watch today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he wasn't political, but Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead were.
Yeah.
They were on purpose.
Correct.
Because the Dawn of the Dead was more
like
about the consumption of consumerism. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And on a note, too, when I talked to him, Day of the Dead's his favorite movie, too.
Interesting.
And there was a whole part of Day of the Dead that he couldn't do, which ended up being Land of the Dead. which there was a structure above ground,
yeah,
as well as underground, but the budget dictated he couldn't do the above ground,
right?
Part
so
of
in Land
military.
Of the Dead, there is a
the tower.
There's a tower, yeah, where the rich are able to survive and be okay in this tower, where like the poorer class are stuck outside, mm-hmm, and the zombies attack. The zombies get into the city, and then they attack the tower.
It's
and
like
all
what they do in Walking Dead.
They cordon off a part of the city, yeah, and then the zombies get in, yeah, and there's a big old
so
attack.
So the rich are all the ones that die.
Well, right. No, everybody dies, but...
Oh, but... Yeah. Okay. No,
but they attack, like, the people you see being torn to shreds are the rich.
Yeah. Yeah. They became right. commentaries.
Correct.
Once Romero realized, oh, I made a commentary.
Right, yeah, right,
you know,
right.
Then he kind of ran with it. But, yeah, okay. I mean, I think that...
He wasn't.
And I think if you go back and actually watch Last Man on Earth, which was the Vincent Price, that was also I Am Legend. That's very similar to Night of the Living Dead. And if you think Night of the Living Dead is real groundbreaking, you have to go back a few years and watch that. But almost, you can do that.
Correct.
Keep going back.
Yeah.
But
you'll find the original
builds,
at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything builds on what came before it.
Right. And it's weird. Like even, we've referenced the remake before. In the remake, it's Barbara survives. Mm-hmm. Like Barbara is your hero. Because she kind of goes into that Ripley mode. Where she is that meek, kind of timid character, and then she does the complete 180, mm-hmm, and she becomes Ripley from Aliens.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's Carol on The Walking Dead.
Kind of, yes.
I mean, that's exactly...
Yeah. But she has to put down Ben. Like, Ben does go into the basement, but he comes back up as a zombie.
Yep.
And she has to put down
Ben. It's a little different.
It's a little bit different because it's kind of like the Evil Dead remake, where it's got enough of a twist where it is kind of a different. You've got your structures, like all of your beats are there, but the ending is different. And then she, like, I feel like she may, in my brain, like she becomes the Hick Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
that's kind of the progression of that character.
She goes real nuts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there you go.
But yeah, I will say, as someone who's never seen one of these movies, I really enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, awesome. I did, and my wife had never seen it either. And like, we started off kind of making fun of it because it is very dated.
There's MST3K does. Yeah. It's either them or Riff Tracks.
Probably Riff Tracks
does this, and it's great.
And it's easy to make fun of, especially at the beginning,
right?
But because it's, you know, the acting isn't great, but I will say that boy, after about 20 minutes, we weren't it had sucked us in. And that says a lot when you can begin by mocking a movie and then stop and really enjoy it.
Well, I made sure years and years ago, because I'm obviously a horror fan, but I made sure and went back and watched a lot of classic films, a lot of films I'd heard of.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason you've, and the only movie was Gone with the Wind, where I was like, this is a piece of junk.
Really? You know, I
couldn't stand it.
I watched Gone with the Wind for the first time like 2 or 3 months ago. It was another one that had just always, because it's like, it's intimidating.
When did you have 4 hours free of your time?
It was, when was it? It was
take
over,
a vacation day?
Yeah, it really was. It was like over Memorial Day or something, you know?
Because, geez.
And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it, to be perfectly honest.
See, I didn't.
Why someone wouldn't, but like, I just got sucked into the soap opera of it. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, what's going to happen next? Like, it's just a big soap opera.
Well, and you love soaps. You love your soaps.
But I think people who are not.
Stories. I love my stories,
I think people who are not into horror films as much should do the same thing.
Yeah.
They should go back, because it caused me to watch.
Totally.
My Darling Clementine by John Ford. I mean, the old
isn't that weird? Isn't that weird the way, like,
yeah. And I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to at the conventions too, they'll talk to me about the horror movies. I'm like, look, I'm a movie guy.
Yeah,
horror got me into it, but that showed me who directors were,
right,
producers were, how movies were filmed. And the only thing I don't like is musicals.
Mm. I'm with you.
Being a music guy, I lose suspension of disbelief as soon as you break out in song. If I jumped up to this table and started singing. I
please
mean,
do.
Our numbers would go through the roof.
It's interesting. We talked about that because Tom and I really like musicals, and we're like, why don't they bring back the musical? And we said there's people that just can't stand them for whatever reason.
And I think the problem is Hollywood went through a period of about 20 years of not making musicals. And if you're not...
Like the taste for them kind of disappeared after
that? I think because it takes such a suspension of disbelief for the exact reason you're saying, that if you don't kind of... get exposed to musicals at an early age, it's a really high bar
So there's generations
to overcome. And yeah, so they I think they went basically a generation without making a significant number of musicals. And I think they just, I think they just lost
I
America.
Agree, though. I'm also not, I'm not a huge fan at all.
And I
appreciate them. Like, yeah. I know that there's an audience. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
I think music is music.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, I like music in films, but I don't.
Now, what about an animated movie, like in Beauty and the Beast, when they break in a
can't
song?
Can't stand it.
I didn't know if like that somehow, it. Like, because I've noticed a lot of people, they can't stand it when live action does it, but with cartoons, they can adapt.
You stop the story.
Yeah.
You stop the story. You're sitting there going, like that.
But you're telling a story.
But here's the thing.
You don't need the music to do
it. When a musical does it right, it doesn't stop the story.
Right.
It advances the story. But you're right. A lot of musicals, they write the songs and then plug them in. But the great musicals, they those songs move the story forward.
Like Victor Victoria, I liked.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just thought that was a great movie. But I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny. Really funny. And I thought the music, it was about someone who was a performer.
Right.
So they were showing the thing. Okay, I'll go with that. I'll go along with that.
A lot of musicals that you do get these days, they try to go, they're musicals that are about performers for that very reason. It's
maybe
a lot
Chicago
easier.
Is...
No.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. No. I watched Producers, my wife. I remember going, I love the Producers. Like the old Mel Brooks Producers.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, all right. So I sat down to watch it with her. We got 10 minutes into it. I go, is this a musical? And she goes, yeah, because I didn't laugh once.
Yeah.
Mm. And in the original Producers, I started dying laughing as soon as I saw Gene Wilder.
Now, so I was like that. I didn't know anything about Into the Woods.
Yeah.
And we did it for the show. Mm-hmm. And then, like, immediately, Emily Blunt and James, whatever his name is, the guy that took over for...
Yeah, Corgan or whatever.
Yeah, starts singing. Corgi. And I was like, oh, no. What have I done?
Yeah. Well, it just takes you out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough for somebody, and you're probably the same way. When you watch horror movies, a lot of them, it takes a lot to get you going into something anyway.
Yeah.
I get the style of movie I get most bored with, horror movies.
Yeah. I've seen everything.
You're exposed to it. I go to foreign films. I have to. Like, I'm trying to think, just grab it out of the air. Rare Exports. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. I think we talked about that on the show.
It was one of our Christmas things.
That was your choice.
My Christmas pick.
Happy Holidays. Behind the Mask.
Yeah.
You know, Leslie Burnham. Yeah. That's a great movie. Yeah.
Well, that's why Cabin in the Woods is so good.
We watched Tucker and Dale last night.
When there's a Babadook. Twist like that.
Babadook is great.
I hated that movie.
Did you really?
I did not like
that. Oh, I was a big fan.
Yeah.
See, that's why I said, did you like It Follows?
It was okay.
Because I talked to someone that loves Babadook and hates It Follows.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. To me, It Follows was like Halloween without Michael Myers.
It was a hipster Halloween.
It was just someone walking towards you, but it wasn't the same person.
Right. Hipster Halloween.
So it was without Michael Myers, but it was the same.
Which I liked. Like I that's what I liked about it.
It was okay. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Somebody walked. I was like, okay. You know, I bought into it. Late Phases is probably one of the best horror films I've seen in a long time. It's a werewolf movie. And it's a old vet who's blind. He goes to a retirement community, and there's a werewolf killing people. So, like, Ginger from Gilligan's Island, Tina Louise, she's in it.
Wow.
Like, so it's all older
people
in it, and this blind vet is the only guy that knows what's going on. So it's like Silver Bullet, but instead of a wheelchair Corey Haim, it's a blind veteran.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
That sounds cool. It's on Netflix streaming, I believe. It's called Late Phases.
I'm going to add it right now.
Great.
Yeah.
And Bob Kurtzman, who did the, from K&B, he did the effects for It Follows, and then he also did the stuff for Late Phases.
He did the effects for Yoga Hosers that's coming out. Yeah.
So, you know. And,
he's good. He's really good.
Yeah. So I didn't like the werewolves in the movie, but it didn't matter.
Right.
It didn't matter. It was such a well-written, well-played movie. And I like a story.
Yeah.
I don't care about the gore. I don't care either way. But I will not watch a torture porn movie. Like,
no.
Where's the story
I agree
that?
With you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when those first started... Like, I thought Saw was really good because it was different.
No, it's good. Right.
It's a cool twist and stuff.
It's a story.
So that was cool. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right, right.
It wasn't just watch how crazy we're going to get with these kills.
I'm trying to think. Yeah. Was it High Tension? High Tension, I think, was the other one that I was like, all right, I'm with it.
Yeah. That was just a brutal movie.
It was a brutal movie.
But I will say, from horror movies, the ones I do like, it tends to be more about mood than it
Silence of the Lambs.
What's that?
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
I watch an eerie movie. That's one of my favorite terms. I say if it's eerie,
If it gives me
an old
creeps.
TV movie, Dark Knight of Scarecrow, which some people have seen, some people haven't.
I love that movie.
That is an eerie film.
Yeah, it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, it's very good.
What's his name from
Larry Drake?
Larry Drake. Thanks.
That was his first Dr. film.
Giggles.
Role.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he got to play that, Dr. and then Giggles. Benny.
Yeah.
He played Benny later on his career on
that,
L.A. Law.
That movie is as creepy as all get out. It's a made-for-TV movie. But
like Gargoyles.
Yeah, Gargoyles is good. Cornell Wilde.
That still gives me the willies. Yeah. That's one of my...
House of Wax.
Halloween.
But I talked to J.D. Fagelson, the guy who wrote that many times. Yeah. And that was not written for a TV movie. The way it was written, it could be a TV movie.
Right.
I'm with you.
So they shot it as a theatrical...
Yeah.
As if it was a theatrical film. But they knew it was going to CBS.
Yeah, there was a lot more TV movies back then.
Yeah.
You get to
do that anymore, so unfortunately.
Which were like movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Movies.
Yeah.
That was a big to-do.
So, anyway, that's 9/11 for you. So, enjoy your belated Halloween episode.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, I guess we will go around the room, and everybody can say where to find them and or plug things if they would like to.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter, DanGraney67, G-R-A-N-E-Y.
Tim O'Savin. Some people call me Timo. It's TimoAndHarleyShow.com or... Look up Facebook. We're all on there, right? That's this new site.
It's the law.
It's this new site called Facebook.
Oh.
F-A-C-E-B-O-O-K. They call it social media.
Is it Facebook or just Facebook?
I don't know. I'm new.
Okay. It's like MySpace, right?
Maybe not quite that technically advanced.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. Okay.
A few less bands on.
You can't add music to your profile.
Yeah.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, B-U-T-T-S 21.
I'm Kevin Brackett. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
I am Tom O'Keefe. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you would like to continue the conversation online, we are there waiting for you at Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. You can go there and join our League of Show Sharers. We greatly appreciate it. And if you shared a show and we didn't mention your name, it's because you have your privacy settings all wonky and we
stop
can't
doing
see it. So, no, I mean, no, I get
really
it. You might have a stalker
fine.
Or a crazy ex-wife. Yeah. Not that I know anything about that.
There it is.
And there it is. And, But don't feel like we've deliberately excluded you.
We appreciate
you.
Everybody that shares the show.
We do greatly appreciate it. So, also, if you have a question for the show, you can send it through the Facebook page. You can tweet it at us at Real Spoilers, or you can email it to us if you're old fashioned like that.
It's just snail mail.
Yes, to realspoilers@reviewstl.com. Next week, I guess we're probably going to James Bond it.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty weird for us not to talk about Spectre.
I feel like we have to do that.
That one's a pretty easy pick. There will be no debates over Facebook chat this week amongst us about which movie. Spectre, or should we circle back around and do Jim and the Holograms?
Yeah.
Take your pick. So thank you, Tim, for coming in, sitting in for two of these. Hopefully
thank
we didn't
you so
bore
much.
You too much.
Well, thanks for having
talking,
me. In.
Talking about like the most obvious horror movie of all time for you. You're like, oh, great.
Speaking
of
there's a reason for it.
So. Speaking of Van Halen, right? So we greatly appreciate your
time.
Thank
you. Indeed.
And I believe that's it for this week. Next week, it will be James Bond. And until then, Jeff blinds Thorwald with his flashbulbs.
see the enemy's wiles.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.